Welcome to Madison Labor Radio. Labor Radio is dedicated to bringing news, information, and cultural events focused on working people and the labor movement to the Madison area and surrounding communities. I am Mike Bernhard, a retired member of the AFT and the IBEW, and currently a member of the IWW. Your support is necessary to make Labor Radio and all the great programming on WORT possible.
Hi, I'm Susie Titone, a member of the Free Congregation of Sauk County. Today, we discuss union elections at two area Starbucks stores, get an update on negotiations at Meritor, take a look at a walkout by Dollar General employees in Mineral Point, learn about the upcoming South Central Federation of Labor Community Services Conference, and much more.
Money speaks for money, the devil for his own. Who comes to speak for the skin and the bone? What a comfort to the widow, the light.
Two Madison area Starbucks stores will hold union recognitions election on Monday. Greg Jabowski talked with a worker organizer.
On February 20th, Starbucks Workers United announced that 21 Starbucks stores across the country, including the Rimrock Starbucks in Madison and the Broadway Starbucks in Monona, had filed petitions with the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, to unionize with them. And this Monday, March 18th, both Madison area stores will hold an NLRB-administered election to formally join SWU. Eddie Kohlhepp, a barista at the Rimrock Starbucks and a member of the organizing committee there, spoke today to Labor Radio. Kohlhepp explained why her store signed up to join a union.
Our store, we started organizing around early December. There was a lot of promotions going on and a lot of new drinks that were being released, and they weren't really giving us any information. It was kind of like a last straw situation. There was already a lot of scheduling issues and a lot of hours issues. Some partners weren't getting their benefit when they were supposed to be working enough hours to get them. And with all of that just being released, we were kind of like, all right, we don't want to do this anymore. We need to have more say. A couple of us started going to meetings with one of the union reps. There was probably about a two-week period to when we got all our cards signed. Everyone was pretty much on board.
A union information effort by Madison community members who came to the store in November proved helpful to the workers, said Kohlhepp.
We got information from the people who stopped in November. One of the other committee members reached out and started that process, and then started reaching out to the rest of the partners, and me and two others joined the committee, hoping to get the organizing process going. So we found that through the people that came by in November, and we just kind of started that process from there.
After the cards were put in, management took a new interest in worker feelings and opinions, said Kohlhepp.
Starbucks was supposed to stop union busting. That was what they released shortly after the mass filing. But we have our store manager as well as two of the district managers. One of them is not our district manager. I'm not entirely sure what the situation is there, but they have been in our store repeatedly, back and forth between our location and Monona, and just kind of meetings. They were doing one-on-ones for a little bit. I haven't seen anyone from corporate, like big office yet.
Kohlhepp herself wasn't called into a one-on-one meeting with management, but described what others had told about them.
The meetings were actually held in the lobby of the store. To my understanding, it was a lot of, do you really want a third party representing us? Do you really want to put a wedge between us? Like, what is the union giving you that we can't? And when the partners asked them about things like consistent scheduling and raises, and if they could make that happen, it was all no's or no response.
The organizing committee kept communication open, said Kohlhepp.
Part of the organizing committee, our responsibility is to make sure that everyone is on board and stays connected, because part of becoming a union is being united. It's like the biggest thing we hope from the election is that this will bring us closer together and give us more say in our situation. If we're the ones on the floor making all the money, we deserve to have a little bit more say. And if we stay together, if we stand united, if we regularly talk to each other, work things out, then that will go a lot easier.
Support from Starbucks customers in the community has lifted the workers' spirits, says Kohlhepp.
I think most of our customers at this point probably know about it just because it's so much in the news, and that's great. I love that. I love that we're getting to like put this out there and show the world what we're doing. And a lot of our customers have mentioned to us that they saw it in the news. They've been, oh, you're going to be a union soon. We're like, that's the hope. And there are others that have said congratulations on filing. We haven't yet had anyone say anything negative. A lot of them are just like, way to go. We hope this works out. You deserve it, which is awesome. I think it's awesome that we're getting so much support from the community around us. I mean, we love seeing them, and now we know that they love seeing us and want the best for us as well, which is so cool. It's really so cool.
That was Eddie Kolup, a Starbucks barista and a member of the organizing committee at the Madison Rimrock store. Both the Rimrock Starbucks and a Starbucks in Monona will hold an NLRB-administered union election this Monday to become members of Starbucks Workers United. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski.
Meritor support staff is mobilizing for a new contract. Frank Emsbach has the story.
Stop turnover, a fair contract now, is what workers and community members coming to Meritor Hospital heard on Monday morning on their way into work. SEIU Wisconsin, representing the 500 support workers at Meritor Unity Point Health, launched their public contract mobilization campaign this week. Their hope is to build momentum for a new contract. The contract expired March 3rd. Bargaining began February 14th. Labor Radio spoke with Andrew Van Roy, a member of the bargaining team and a CNA in the ICU at Meritor Hospital. Are wages an issue in these contract negotiations?
For certain. This has been a bit of a frustration for us. They have been touting very much that these are fair market increases, but that's really hard to kind of swallow for us, especially when some of the managers make six figures and the CEO got a 17% increase in the last 2 years. And it's just very frustrating for us to just accept that.
What is the hospital's overall response? What is sort of the atmosphere there at the moment?
The more things that they say, the more that people have been getting really upset. At least they hear, during bargaining, they hear certain things that management has said. One of the big things this last time that got people really riled up is our wages were compared to a commodity, like a loaf of bread. And we really feel that our service that we provide the hospital, it's not to be put down to just a simple commodity. You know, we are people providing a service to the hospital. And we kind of found that very degrading to be compared in that way.
The negotiations are open to the membership, so they hear management directly. About 50 members listen in at each negotiating session.
It's interesting that, again, it feels like the more that management talks, the more that people want to listen in. You know, each day that we've had this, it's been more and more people are interested in getting involved.
During this past week, at least 300 members joined the union-organized petition drive in each department aimed at making middle management aware of just how angry people are. What is the union intending to do next to encourage the company to come to the table with meaningful solutions?
Going forward, more and more mobilization is being planned in the future.
In closing, Van Roy emphasized that increased wages are definitely tied to the issue of turnover.
Having good wages, you know, fair wages, that is instrumental in this, you know, in preventing turnover. But we really have a fundamental disagreement.
That was Andrew Van Roo of SEIU Wisconsin speaking of the Meritor negotiations. I am Frank Emsbach from Madison Labor Radio.
Supernatural voodoo woman.
school district employees cannot count on a wage increase this year, and the school might require a referendum to pay for any increase. Carol Weidel has the story.
Madison Teachers Incorporated represents more than 2,700 school district employees. The Madison School District has offered a zero pay increase to employees this year. As reported by the Capital Times, MTI President Michael Jones said he would not settle for a zero pay increase proposed by the board. Conditions on public employee negotiations were set in 2011 with Act 10. This law limits the terms of most public sector unions to negotiating base wage increases no greater than inflation. This year's contracts cannot exceed 4.12%. This is the Consumer Price Index for urban areas. According to the school district, it would cost the district $13.3 million. However, MTI President Jones said anything less than 4.12% will be a pay cut due to inflation. The news Madison School Superintendent Joe Gothard comes from St. Paul, Minnesota. He will receive $256,000 in salary and a 2% minimum raise. In Gothard's former school district, St. Paul, Minnesota, the union settled after striking. The newest St. Paul agreement has not yet been released publicly. The state legislature limits the revenue it shares with school districts. Referendums are often necessary to raise sufficient funds for the buildings and personnel costs. The district began preliminary budget planning that the School of Education must approve in June, according to timelines from the district. Sources for this story are the Capital Times and the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Carol Weidel.
Six employees at the Dollar General store located in the town of Mineral Point walked off the job on Saturday in what they say was a protest of the company's donation policies. Labor Radio has a report on the goals and methods of the workers.
Workers at a Dollar General store in the town of Mineral Point walked out of their positions over the weekend in protest of what they say are over-restrictive policies that are hurting communities. Customers arrived at the store located on Dodge Street Friday and Saturday morning to find that the doors were locked and signs outlining the workers' grievances were posted in the windows. The large posters with messages reading, "We quit," and "The whole team has walked away due to a lack of appreciation," along with a letter explaining the complaints in more detail, were posted to a community Facebook page. The workers' letter explains that a large part of their complaints converged on the company's policy on donating store merchandise that was no longer being shelved for sale, which they felt was too restrictive, especially for foodstuffs that had not yet expired. Quote, "These were items that weren't on the donation list, but were totally usable," Caitlin Margin, the former assistant manager, told WKOW27 in an interview. Quote, "I was always told when I was younger and in school to recycle." Workers say that staffing and scheduling were additional concerns that they hoped to underscore with the walkout. The majority of their manifesto, however, focuses on the company's donation policies. The workers' action is one of the most recent additions to mounting questions about large corporations and their obligations to the communities that they operate in, especially as big brands like Target, Rite Aid, Walgreens, and Dollar General competitor Family Dollar undertake managed divestments from communities around the country. This is especially true for stores that have crowded out other businesses as a consequence of moving in and subsequently become load-bearing institutions in the communities that they serve. CNN reported in 2019 that of Dollar General's locations, 75% operated in a town with a population of 20,000 or fewer residents, which includes the store in Mineral Point. Quote, "We cannot and will not work for a company that does not stand behind in the true honest form of what they want the world to see them as," the workers' letter reads. Quote, "Don't make claims about supporting and helping communities when the reality is that it's all about the bottom line and not about support or help." Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Sean Hagerup.
Unions in Minneapolis came together to plan joint actions the week of March 2nd. What was the result? Frank Emsbach has the story.
As reported on Labor Radio previously, Unions in Minneapolis plan for a week of action and mutual support beginning March 2nd. The week of action ultimately involved almost 20,000 workers in the Twin Cities region. It included union members, community organizations, and non-union workers. The local unions spanned both the public and private sector, transportation, building services, teachers, and healthcare workers, with worker centers and tenants' rights groups joining as well. Initially led by SEIU Local 26, building for common contract expiration dates and mutual support began almost 10 years ago. Labor Radio spoke with Amy Stagger, associate editor of Workday magazine, to get her assessment of the results.
Actually, like in the weeks leading up to the week of action, Metro Transit drivers won an agreement. They won higher wages and for mechanics and bus drivers. And then in the days leading up to the March 2nd deadline, security officers and retail janitors with SAU Local 26 also won higher wages and their first ever paid holidays, among other benefits. And then early in the week on March 4th, public sector workers in the city of Minneapolis, represented by the Laborers Union, averted a strike and won their highest wage increase ever. And then on March 5th, it was announced that the St. Paul educators won an agreement with the St. Paul Public School District that they still have yet to vote on. But they also had set a strike date for March 11th.
Airport workers also struck, supported by the week of action.
Yeah. SAU 26 had janitors out on strike Monday through Wednesday. And there was an incredible demonstration on Wednesday at the airport on the sidewalk and in the streets where 15 people were arrested for civil disobedience. But the airport workers also won an amazing agreement, $20 per hour, full retirement benefits, life insurance, more sick days and holidays, lowered healthcare costs, and even now there's a bill that was introduced in the legislature to require health and welfare benefits for all airport workers.
Many unions in both the public and private sector pledged mutual support. The SEIU, SEIU Healthcare of Minnesota and Iowa, the Minneapolis and St. Paul Federation of Teachers, the UFCW, the CWA, the laborers, and many others.
Do you think this is a model for other cities?
I definitely think it's a model for other cities, and the workers themselves also know that it's a model for other cities.
What are the next steps? Will this coalition continue?
Yeah, I definitely think it will continue. Every year they've done these weeks of action, usually around March, but I've heard from folks that this was the largest week of action that they've had ever during the week. There were a lot of other workers who are organizing or have tried to organize unions at their workplaces, and they were very inspired by the workers on strike.
Thanks to Amy Stagger for her assessment of the week of action. I am Frank Emsbach for Madison Labor Radio.
Faculty, staff, and students are expressing dismay after the UW-Milwaukee system announced the closure of its Waukesha campus at the end of the spring 2025 semester. Labor Radio has more.
The University of Wisconsin announced this week that it would be closing down the UW-Milwaukee campus at Waukesha at the end of the spring 2025 semester. The decision will result in the termination of over 150 staff and tenured faculty, as well as the disenrollment of over 2,100 students, increasing the strain on an already contracting local student body. Students and faculty alike were quick to voice displeasure and shock at the decision, which they say was made without their input or consent and will have dramatic consequences on their academic careers. Quote, having the intimacy here allowed me to better communicate with some of my professors, really grapple with the content, and just having those open lines of communication, as well as forming more intimate relationships with even my peers, student Dawson Picard told Channel 3000. The American Federation of Teachers Wisconsin, who represent faculty from across the UW system, condemned, quote, the unnecessary closure of UW-Milwaukee Waukesha's campus, which is yet another drastic consequence of over a decade of political austerity imposed on the UW system, its workers, and its students, end quote. Chad Allen Goldberg, AFT Wisconsin secretary, added that the closure, quote, again shows the regents and UW officials are derelict in their duty. These campus closures are the entirely predictable result of systemic defunding and a restructuring plan that the regents and system president decided in 2017 without consulting faculty, staff, or students, end quote. At its peak, the University of Wisconsin system operated 13 satellite campuses across the state. With the announced closure of the Waukesha campus, five of those 13 campuses, in towns like Fond du Lac, Richland, and Marinette, will be shut down or moved online by the end of the academic year. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Sean Hagerup.
Organized labor leads the way when it comes to community service. Frank's MSPAC reports.
The Wisconsin AFL-CIO Community Services Conference will take place at the Concourse Hotel March 21st and 22nd. Labor Radio spoke with Ann McNeary, the AFL-CIO Community Service Liaison, which is a partnership between United Way of Dane County and the South Central Federation of Labor. We asked exactly what is the Community Services Program of the AFL-CIO.
The motto of the Community Services Program is to make the community a better place in which to live, work, raise a family, and retire, which in my mind covers all aspects of life. And it, like family supporting jobs are critical to that. And those being union family supporting jobs are usually even more successful or better.
McNeary described the purpose of the conference.
This is an effort to bring people from across the state together to talk about community services work being done. We actually give two different awards, one to an individual and one to a group that have been outstanding as far as work that they've done in their individual communities, and to give people ideas of things they could do, but also to educate about other things going on in the greater labor community, within the state, whatever it might be.
What type of program does the community services program support?
Wide range of things. Some of it could be helping kids learn to read, so you're serving as a volunteer tutor. Some of it could be helping with a food pantry. It can be a wide range of things. Some people might be helping build homes through Habitat for Humanity. So it is a wide range of things that people do already.
Is there a goal or objective for this year's conference?
But just for people to get involved in whatever way they can, however they're comfortable, to get locals involved. In many areas, the locals are small, so hopefully they can band together with their central labor councils to do work. So it really not one size fits all throughout the state. So to figure out what works in a particular area and where they might be able to just become part of the greater community, I think it's important for the general public to know about unions, to know that unions do good work, and that we're all about collaboration and making the community stronger.
Who attends these conferences?
It is a range of folks. Some are rank and file members from their locals, but usually it's people who've been involved in community services in their local community.
While there will be no keynote speakers this year, the leadership of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO will be there. Present at the conference also will be lawyers who can offer advice regarding labor and employment law. Thanks to Ann McNeary, AFL-CIO Community Service Liaison, for this interview. I am Frank Emsmack for Madison Labor Radio.
Two major unions have joined the call for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip this week, adding to the steadily growing number of labor organizations that have called for an immediate cessation of hostilities over recent months. Sean Hagerup has the story.
Two unions representing over 1.5 million workers have approved resolutions calling for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, joining a chorus of voices in the working class demanding an immediate end to the military operations that have ravaged the Palestinian territory and its residents since October. Unite Here, an international union that represents 300,000 service and hospitality workers in the U.S. and Canada, as well as the American Federation of State, county and municipal employees, which represents 1.3 million members, both ratified their calls for a ceasefire last Friday. Calling the war in Gaza a, quote, humanitarian disaster, the AFSCME resolution reads, quote, "The board calls for a negotiated ceasefire that includes the release of all hostages and immediate humanitarian assistance for people in Gaza and the West Bank," end quote. They join with national and international unions like the United Auto Workers, International Longshore and Warehouse Union, American Postal Workers Union, Service Employees International Union, and the United Electrical Workers, among other local and national labor organizations who have also passed ceasefire resolutions. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Sean Hagerup.
And now our statistic of the week. Immigrants are not hurting U.S.-born workers.
Are immigrants hurting U.S.-born workers? Not according to a recent report by the Economic Policy Institute. The immigrant share of the labor force reached a record high of 18.6% in 2023, according to the EPI analysis of current population survey data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. According to EPI, the reality is that the economy does not have a fixed number of jobs, and what we see today is a growing economy that is adding jobs for both immigrants and U.S.-born workers. The Economic Policy Institute offers these key facts to show that immigrants are not hurting the employment outcomes for U.S.-born workers. First, the unemployment rate in the U.S. is the lowest rate on record. Secondly, the share of prime-age U.S.-born individuals with a job is the highest in more than 20 years. In other words, immigrants are not taking jobs away from U.S.-born citizens. Third, the labor force partition rate among men without a college degree is up, meaning that if immigration was negatively affecting this group of workers, we would see it in lower participation rates, and this is simply not the case. The EPI concludes that immigrants are an integral part of the U.S. labor market, filling gaps caused by demographic changes in the United States and contributing to strong economic growth. The immigrants that make up 18.6% of the U.S. labor force are playing key roles in numerous industries and are employed in a mix of lower, middle, and higher wage jobs. And, as the Congressional Budget Office recently reported, immigration is contributing to strong economic growth, with future immigration forecasted to boost real gross domestic product by 2% over the next 10 years, as well as increasing government revenue. In short, the EPI concludes that the idea that immigrants are making things worse for U.S.-born workers is wrong. The reality is that the labor market is absorbing immigrants at a rapid pace while simultaneously maintaining record low employment for U.S.-born workers. For the full report, go to epi.org. I am Frank Emsbach for Madison Labor Radio.
Thanks for listening to Madison Labor Radio. I'm Susie Titone. Thanks to editor Frank Emsbach, assistant Robin G., copy editor Simon Gordon, reporters Greg Jaboski, Carol Weidel, Sean Hagerup, and damage control specialist Joanne Powers. Special thanks to our reader coordinator, Keith Steffen, engagement editor, Alice Herman, and to all of our readers and the members of IBEW Local 2304 WORT Staff Collective.
And I'm Mike Bernhard. We would also like to thank all the generous contributors of Labor Radio and WORT, and please stay tuned for Dave Watts and the Blues Cruise.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
WORT would like to thank the following local restaurants and businesses who provided meals for our hardworking volunteers during our recent winter pledge drive. Bandung, Bonzo, Cardinal Bar, Cooper's Tavern, Einstein's Coffee and Bagels, Glass Nickel Pizza West, Hong Kong Cafe, Ian's Pizza on State Street and Francis Street, Just Veggies, Lao Lang Zong, Migrants Madison, Melio's on MLK, Original Pancake House on University Ave, Pizza Bruta, Soup's I Did It Again in Spring Green, Teddy Wedgers, Weary Traveler Free House, Wilma's Fund LGBT Assistance, and the Willie Street Co-op. WORT would like to extend our gratitude to these restaurants for helping to put the community in WORT Community Radio through their donations of food. Gratefully yours for nearly five decades, this is WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Lit up like a crown.